welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are embarking on Labor Day weekend. We go, but it is a great time for dedication. There we go. And we say Saturn is stationing now, inward, 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 goes forward on September 6th. So it's a powerful time to convene backstage, in a sense, to hone our dedications, our manifestos of dedicated devotion, to get organized in some way. I'm going to go to the beach at my house and rummage things around. So our guest today, in a sense, our large guest is Heat. Our human reporter is longtime ally Rob Fanny. The heat is on. His Twitter is at Robert Scribbler. That we understand human complicity in Earth climate and everything crisis, and that we humans are willing to cooperate with nature's guiding genius as really the only way to go. Rob is a prolific blogger, and again, YouTube things, they're all posted on my website, and his Twitter feed and my Twitter feed, Stand Up Coyote, and all of our Facebook pages, Coyote Network News, really useful. We'll be delving into all of those. And his essential blog has shapeshifted into his YouTube profferings. And also he's the author of Growth Shock, which is Growth Shock, Tragedy and Hope at the Limits of a Finite World. So, yes, and as it says at the end of his pitch, and we've also posted a link to, proceeds from book sales go to supporting the climate action group 350.org and to supporting individual, local, and community-based sustainability and renewable energy development funds. Yay, welcome, Rob.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
It's a pleasure, and here you are in the home studio. That's great. We love that. So I just wanted to what did I want to do? I wanted to fumble around here for a moment. Thank you. We're all in this thing together.
You're certainly welcome.
That's right, exactly. So I just wanted to quote from myself in my really pretty great book, Making the Gods Work for You, but just the seasonal change. You know, Virgo comes after the trumpeting carnival of Leo's self-expression. As the lights dim, the tents are folded, the music fades, and the days grow shorter, and Virgo gets serious and turns inward to ask big questions. Virgo is critic, analyst, healer, who cures society's ills by reintroducing standards of quality and purity. And we say that, you know, the poignant wafts of autumn air, although, hello, Australian listeners, we know it's reversed. You keep the reversal magic. The poignant wafts of autumn air remind Virgo, parts of all of us, that all wants to be put in order for the approaching winter. Virgo appreciates both the beauty and the necessity of order. How we order one's life in accord with the seasonal cycle will determine whether and how we survive. This was written a million years ago. An important part of harvesting is dividing, separating, calculating which seeds will be saved to plant the new crop. This task demonstrates Virgo's discrimination, a crucial trait that ensures survival of the whole community. And we go on from there. So we are in the, you know, beauty and order and in this disordered realm. So I was perusing, more than perusing, I was watching almost all of your video blogs, which are really useful. What you said, 6 to 10 minutes, bite size.
Yes. Short, but packed with as much information as I can cram into that time frame.
Right. So we want to go everywhere, really, you know, heat. And then just to bring in something that you didn't talk about, but I was recently cahooting with a wonderful ally from South Africa who had flown into a conference of astrologers in Chicago. And it was interesting because it was the corporate guy, not part of the conference, who was like, South Africa, we're all studying you. And he was the one who brought up the important thing, because in South Africa, everyone is allotted 16 gallons of water per day. That's it.
Yeah. Right. Water scarcity is a very serious problem there. It's one of the regions of the world, one of the many regions of the world right now that is being impacted by severe drought. And as the earth warms, you end up with more extremes in rainfall and more extremes in drying. As the hydrological cycle gets pumped up, you get more evaporation and more precipitation. And on the dry side, that can generate more and more extreme droughts. We're already in a range where climate change impacts could be described as risky and as dangerous, and that range is a 1 degree Celsius to 2 degree Celsius warming range. And what we're fighting for right now, those of us who are concerned about human-caused climate change and the impacts of fossil fuel burning, is trying to prevent the catastrophic impacts from occurring. And it's so critical that we all do everything we can to act now to try and prevent those impacts, that we do what we can on an individual basis, but even more importantly, learning to work together in our communities and in our states, and in particular at the mass level, at the national level and at the global level, to get us moving in a direction where we start to blunt the edge of this axe that is starting to fall on us.
Yeah, there's a lot of, or remove the jackboot of tyranny off of the jugular of nature. There's a lot of...
That's a good one.
There's a lot of... Right, yeah. Just because nature will come back if we just back off. I mean, there may be some things that are irrevocable, but yeah, in one of your YouTube presentations on drought, you know, 25% of the U.S., you said, predominantly in the Southwest, but then you took us through going, well, look at the heat and the thing and the... Right, everywhere. So... Everywhere it's coming, right? And there's no... Some people go, well, I'm going to move to Costa Rica. It's like, it's coming there. I mean, something is coming everywhere. There's no escaping, but there is wherever we are dedicating. I mean, may dedication, you know, replace escape.
If there's a safe place in the world, it's enacting.
Oh, that's good.
It's in
that's
movement.
Good.
It's okay. It's in not sitting still. It's in not reacting. It's in not pulling back. It's in looking outward. It's in trying to preserve the things that support us. You talk about how it's saving nature. It's not just saving nature. It's saving the kind of nature that supports us. I want to talk about that because that's something that we often talk about. It's the world that human civilization has risen up in is a world that loves and supports human civilization, that provides for it. And by producing these heat-trapping gases and pumping them into the atmosphere, we're changing nature. We're turning nature into something that is hostile to us. Nature will survive. Human civilization is, you know, there's a lot of strengths and a lot of resiliencies that we have, but we are also fragile and vulnerable and dependent upon the life support systems of our world.
Right. And we could go, you know, radical Derek Jensen going, get rid of humans. And we go, yes, but the problem is we take so much life going down. It's not like a quiet exit. So we're all in this thing together. It's like, guests of show working to save bonobos in the Congo, willing to cooperate with the good part of even terrible people. You know, and what they discovered is to save the bonobos, they had to save the humans. And so they implemented, you know, ferry service to so that villagers could take their produce to market, and they started a university of, you know, who's your friend? You know, the environmentalists are our friend. And sort of take the pressure off. So it's like the whole thing, right? To save the bonobos, got to save the humans, to save, you know, and I didn't say, you know, saving nature, actually, but that's an important point. I did say cooperating with nature's guiding genius, which is why I love to bring up, you know, Jeanine Benyus and biomimicry rather than looting nature. Why don't we borrow her ingenious designs? You know, there's this hot and dangerous, you know, embodied by the hot, dangerous, crazy, reactive, murderous cartoon of vulgarity currently pretending to be president as a kind of horrific, perfect, hot, reactive of everything that we want to compost and transcend in some way. And then I lost my next thought even thinking about Trumbull-Stiltskin. So, but I did want to bring up also the cooperating, the idea of a we spoke backstage about, you know, another guest and then yourself, a 20-year vision, a 20-year plan and a 500-year vision, which we might want to get to as a heartening way through, but we do want to honor everything terrible. But something also to put on the work table from our ally radio guest and environmental ally, Lisa Gauthier. She says, perhaps your audience would like to be invited to the humsum.org, the hum, H-U-M, SUM.org, Humanity Adding Solutions, the community platform for the Global Climate Summit in San Francisco in September. And she said, if they mention your podcast or your show, how they heard about us, we will make them silver members. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it's good. It's a place to talk about the good stuff people are doing for their own environments, physically, gardening, biking, shopping, secondhand, carrying your usables professionally, recycling at work, and government eco-purchasing contracts, politically and on out. The goal is to have a website full of solutions to barriers in cities all around the world and have those discussions highlighted for the summit. Thank you. All right, team, if you go to thehumsum.org and you mention the Visionary Activist Show, then you have a silver citizenship card. It's okay, there you go. So there's that. But yes, because we do want critique and solutions, and as again backstage, as I mentioned, you know, part of the unique dedication of this show is that all parts of everybody are completely welcome. So who brought what to this renaissance? So what you're known for, and we want to honor fully, you know, is you as a climate reporter for a long time, and your beautiful blog, which is now shape-shifted into a YouTube things, and we want to honor that. But then I also want to get to the other fun things that we talked about backstage, too. Strategy, your wise Scorpio self will get there, too. Because we want everything, right? It's kind of the mythological imagination is important now. It's part of how we feel kinship, and all of its permutations, even unto Dungeons and Dragons. But before we get there, let's come back to you know, did you know? Because also what we were saying backstage is for all of us to be really informed is a responsibility and an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for effective cultural influence, because nobody minds being asked, did you know? 25% in the U.S., you know, is in drought. Did you know, as you report on August 13th, 820,000 acres burned in California, which was twice the size of 2017? So you are a news service useful to did you know, right? What are, and you know, the Florida red tide, I mean, wherever you want to go now, but let's honor the Florida red tide for a moment. Yeah, just guide us into that.
Oh, so you want some facts about the Florida red tide?
Yeah.
So it's at least the worst. So not only is there a red tide on the west coast of Florida and South Florida, but you also have a large cyanobacteria bloom, which is blue-green algae, that's occurring in Lake Okeechobee and in a number of the inland waterways, and as well as in the estuaries and along the beaches from the west coast to the east coast. So you have a combined outbreak of multiple harmful microorganisms when they bloom en masse. And these microorganisms by themselves in low quantities are not detrimental, but when you have these massive blooms, then you can get the production of various biotoxins, which are very toxic to fish and marine wildlife and can present a danger to anyone working in waterways or living near the waterways or going to the beach. And as a result, we've seen thousands of fish lost, hundreds of sea turtles, more than 100 manatees, and many dolphins either driven away
or dead.
Or dead. And the causes of this are combined. It's combined irresponsible loss of helpful protections in Florida due to bad actor politicians like Rick Scott, who removed key environmental protections that helped to guide the farm industry in Florida so that the farm industry wouldn't have a terrible negative effect on the waters in Florida and surrounding Florida. And so you end up with a lot of nutrients flushing out of farms and into waterways, feeding these algae blooms. And then in addition, you have the larger rising tide, if you will, of human-caused climate change that is warming the waters in Florida, which provide longer periods for these various microorganisms to bloom. And the effect, as we have seen through so many pictures, and for anyone who lives in South Florida, who has been confronted with the stink of the putrefying waterways, is quite... I hesitate to use the word catastrophic, but it's
no, you can.
When you're driven from the beaches, when you're forced to completely shut down fishing industries, when tourism it has tourists have fled the region because of the stench and
the burning eyes and the lifeguards with the masks on and it is all washing up in front of Rick Scott's home.
Bitter irony.
Well, that's why I want to go mythology and Dungeons and Dragons in a sense, because it's all speaking to us, right? And it's everything real, everything symbolic as well, going as though it were like the stench washing up on Rick Scott's, you know, dynamic. It's also I did like some years ago that that it was what was the thing that was clogging nuclear power plant? Jellyfish. So two things in California and also in Scotland at the same time, jellyfish were clogging the nuclear power reactors. And I go, there's a kind of symmetry there. The thing that gave rise to them, because they're prolific, you know, like the microorganisms that you speak about, jellyfish doing really well, you know. And so it's like we're coming to shut down the thing that gave rise to us. And I go, that's kind of adorable. And it's like, and poison ivy, you're doing really well too. Surround the polluters as well. They're right anyway. So, but Rick Scott, yeah. So, yeah, what you say, the outbreak of harmful, multiple microorganisms. Well, right. Toxin and tonic have always been thought of as a dosage, right? Small amounts, tonic, large amounts, toxic. So it is overwhelming. So we can move on to the next catastrophe, what should we do? Well, you know, again,
you want to talk about responses?
Well, I do want to talk about responses, and also that, you know, and the Florida race and everything, which is intriguing and a lot. And then for all of us as cultural strategists, too, you know, when it says, and you know, Trumpelstiltskin or Trump has, you know, removed these annoying regulations, we replace the word regulations with protections, right?
Absolutely. And it's very important to vote for politicians who will support protections.
Yes.
In the form of regulations. Regulation has been turned into a bad word, but regulation is what keeps poisons out of your food and out of your water, and what can help to reduce catastrophic climate impacts or prevent catastrophic climate impacts, that can prevent situations like we are seeing now in South Florida or reduce the intensity of those situations when they do occur. Regulations or protections are guidelines that keep us safe. And so just as an example, Obama promoted a positive policy. I believe a positive policy called the Clean Power Plan. It didn't do everything possible when it came to reducing carbon emissions and cleaning up our energy system. But what it did do was it moved the ball forward. And as a result of moving the ball forward, it, if it was implemented, would have saved lives. It would have prevented disease. And so now the Trump administration is trying to remove that protection in the form of the Clean Power Plan. And what its own study has found is that it will result in additional 1,400 deaths every year and 40,000 asthma cases every year and more children out of school sick every year. So there's a severe cost. And we look at these as numbers, but what if one of those 1,400 people is one of your friends or one of your family members or one of your relatives, one of the people, one of the souls that I really related to in my blog was D.T. Lang. And D.T. Communicated a lot to with me about the harmful impact of air pollution on his life. And he suffered from respiratory distress, and it ultimately took him from us. And he moved from California to Washington as a result of his distress, and the fires that were growing in California followed him. It's real people. It's not just numbers. And these protections protect us all.
And what awakens our imagination, and our imagination increases kinship, as you just guided us. And you know, again, all of us right now are, you know, who brought what to this Renaissance, and you bring important guiding. And then just to reach back, I love, you know, decades ago, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance did this crucial thing of just what's the price, what's the cost? And the price is, you know, like 10 cents per pound for rock salt to melt snow, but the cost is exorbitant in terms of pollution of water and destruction of infrastructures. And they got Los Angeles to attribute a cost to human suffering. Right, and once it was, they go, oh, we can't afford the internal combustion engine anymore because it costs that. So that's it. It's liberating. I mean, it's not, we're not reducing human suffering. It's just like, oh, okay, price versus cost, you know, is, I think, an important category for everyone's, you know, magic backpack of eloquence and did you know and talking to people. Here's the price. Here's the cost. And if we factor in the cost to corporations, you know, of pollution and all of that, but yeah.
So there is a serious, yeah. If you're talking about climate change in general, it is unaffordable.
Right. The cost.
Right. That's but good. If you keep burning fossil fuels and if you burn them rapidly through the end of this century, the cost is in trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. Just one example of the impact of cost that is already affecting us is Moody's, which is an investment like rating service that rates the credit rating of various entities. It last year started looking at downgrading the credit rating of certain cities based on their climate risk and how they're responding to their climate risk. And so what that means is if their credit rating gets downgraded, then the cost of loans for cities is more. They have to raise taxes more, tax people more to get the same revenue to pay off their loans to do things like repair bridges and, you know, lay power lines and various things that cities do. So the cost of climate change is starting to be paid now, and how much climate change costs is directly related to how much we warm the earth and how much fossil fuels we burn and how much carbon we emit into the atmosphere. I'll just give you one more example. There was a study recently done about the relative cost impacts of sea level rise that have already occurred in the Northeast. And I'm working at this from memory. I don't have my notes, but based on my memory, the cost of sea level rise for the Northeast in this section of the U.S. East Coast that was undertaken in this study was $7 billion additional cost due to the already elevated sea levels and due to the increased impacts from flooding due to storm surge events and nor'easters and things like that. So we're already paying more right now because of the warming that we have already produced. The thing that I'm trying to communicate to you and to everyone else is that eventually it gets to a point where it's so expensive, the damages are so expensive that we can't afford it. And the cost of transitioning to clean energy is far less. And look at all the other wonderful benefits you get from clean energy. You get less damage to water. You get less asthma deaths. You get less air pollution related maladies. So and the human system as a whole becomes more in line with nature, the kind of nature you described at the start of this conversation. So what's the loss? You're simply investing in a great benefit for our future. That there is no loss. It's like, So what's the loss in, say, for example, sending a child to be educated? You have to spend money and resources to do that. Are you just going to keep the money and say, no, I'm not going to educate my child? And the future of that child is in many ways dependent upon how they act in the world, how they learn to respond in the world, their behaviors that they learn when they are educated. So that's a critical survival trait. Are we not going to spend the resources necessary to survive?
Right. And I liked listening to also guest of show, Henry Giroux, fierce lefty academic, but he was speaking also about, yes, education as really crucial, you know, did you know, and also in his, you know, kind of more self-identified secular realm, but it was, he said, and we want to encourage in everyone and in young people utopian thinking. Right, and mythological thinking. And this is a very, you know, hard, realistic kind of guy. And I go, absolutely. We do want to encourage utopian thinking, don't you think?
Well, I think that it's what's very important is to set a goal and to look, say, for example, at the ideal that you want to achieve.
Yeah.
And to try and achieve that. And if you miss utopia and hit somewhere close, then you're lot better off. It's probably not likely that you're going to get the utopian ideal that you first thought of. But there's a reason for aspiration and aspirational thinking, and the reason for that is to move yourself into a better place, and that is certainly possible, even if you don't achieve all of the various wonderful goals that you set out to in the beginning. Through the journey, you got to a better place, and that's so important. It's so much more important than sitting where you are or moving backwards or cynically saying, oh, well, there's just no possibility for improvement.
Well, this is, you know, and at some point, whenever you want to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, I just want to bring up the you know, our mythic, our imaginative selves and how essential this is for everyone. Our dedication, the art form of defining things when we talk across borders, it is so useful. Not only go, did you know, if we ask it in a non-snarky way, because nobody minds being asked, did you know? Did you know about this? Did you know about Rob Fanny's fantastic YouTube thing? Did you know about that? You should go check this out. But also, you know, that the imagination is part of our strategy, in a sense, which is to start with a desirable vision that we could all come into accord. And I've talked to a lot of military right-wingers and stuff, and we could spiral, you know, into a desirable vision that the only solution to terrorism is a wonderful life for all children. And they came there. They go, that's really it, right? You know, and what if, again, the cost versus price? What if we sent, you know, clean water and, you know, and chocolate, you know, the Venusian foreign policy, and, you know, and also what I wanted to kind of cool out the rabidity of those captivated by Trump, you know, is, okay, you have $1.2 billion, you person. Well, what's the first thing you want to do? Build a wall? No, I don't think so. You have 1.2 billion. What would you do? If you had three magic wishes, what would you do? I mean, I think we want to open this up this way, that, because it stops people. And that's also, there's no prison for the unexpected. Right? You see, if we just engage, you know, whose movie are we in, you know, in somebody else's, you know, movie of polarity, it's like, nah. There's no unexpected life. But if we go, well, what's your dream? What could we agree about? But part of the kind of nature's metaphysics, I'll say, is to start with the desirable vision first rather than realism, right? Or how. Because if we start with how, we all go to war. Like, oh no, if my city has water, then your city can't. Or, it's like, start with the desirable vision and then avenues of synchronicity begin to open up. But, you know, we were speaking about your strategy self, and you're a really good strategist. And then I don't know how, but oh, you asked me, had I played Dungeons and Dragons? I'm like, no video games. And you said, it's not a video game. I go, oh, you young person, I don't want to play single shooter. I know it's not a single shooter thing.
First person shooter.
Right. Yeah. Single hobbit shooter.
Hobbits are not first person shooters.
No, exactly. No, that we're in last week's guest, David K. Johnson, I think of as a hobbit. I can say that now that he's not off the air. Well, now that he's not on the air, he is inching the ring of power into the crack of doom. I mean, I think
we need more hobbits.
We do. Yeah. Well, we do want to. We're all of us. Let's see all of us inching the ring of power into the crack of doom. It's really pertinent because, I mean, all the myths, all the stories, and the modern iterations of those are, I think, really essential to our imaginative thinking. But I mean, can you?
So imagination and aspiration, I think, go together.
And
what's interesting is that imagination can be both very personal and a secluded process, or it can be a cooperative process. And for me, so my experience as a child, I don't know who's seen Stranger Things, but those kids playing Dungeons and Dragons in the basement and you know, living through their fears and hopes and their wild fantasies, that's my experience, is working together with a group of people to deal with imaginary problems and solve the imaginary crises of an imaginary world.
That's great. No, hold this thought. It was so riveting. We moved through our break music, but we're gonna take a very short break with our usual Taj Mahal, but hold that thought. Our guest is Rob Fanny, and we're going to bring in Dungeons and Dragons into climate change and all of this. Wait for our exhilarating second half Kahoot, and we will be right back.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. He showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Off and down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our perfect for now and in perpetuity guest is Rob Fanny, also known as Robert Scribbler. Many YouTube blogs are available. You can check out the archives on KPFA, write up, or on my website, coyotenetworknews.com, or also, you don't have a website, apparently.
No, robertscribbler.com is still up. And,
oh, good.
And there are over 1,000 articles that I've written on that page as well. And I'm currently linking to the YouTube page. And I am going to still... I'm going to go ahead and get a voice recognition software and record in text form the
video. That's great. No, everything, you know, everything, the narrative, when as we consider who brought what to this renaissance, and you're bringing a lot of reporting, but we were right there right before the break, and always grateful to Taj Mahal and the great conjure, which means with the law, not human law, nature law. But you were saying imagination, aspiration, and some listeners were going, why Dungeons and Dragons? That would be older people. But right back to you know, imagination, aspiration to solve imaginary problems tones our muscles.
Well, what I learned, and I know this is going to sound really weird and really funny and really geeky.
Excellent.
But what I learned from Dungeons and Dragons was you never give up.
Oh, okay.
You never give up. There's always a way out.
That's it.
As long as you are still alive, as long as you still have a heartbeat, there's hope. And
right.
And it's so funny that in this 6-year journey now that I've taken in trying to promote responses to human-caused climate change and raise awareness of the threat that we face, and it's a serious threat, I have been confronted with hundreds, thousands of people who have come to me and said, it's too bad, it's too hard, why don't you just give up? And in all honesty, you can never give up. You never say die, because as long as you're here, as long as you're blinking and breathing and feeling the heat, you've still got a way out.
Yeah.
You still have options. You still have choices. And I don't know, maybe it's hard. It's a hard lesson to learn because there's a lot out there that does seem really hopeless. But we need to engage that part of ourselves, that imaginary part that can see the potential for a way out. And if you can see that possibility, it's real.
There you go.
You can make it real. And in all honesty, there's science, there's facts, there's the hard truth of the world. But the most important thing, the most important two things is imagination and hope. And well, I'm gonna have one more thing. The will to pursue it.
That's good.
And I know there's a lot of complexities that lie between here and there, but that's the seed from which it all grows.
No, that's brilliant. Because it is a modern form of what in astro-mytho language we call Neptune. Because it's great in one of my favorite fairy tales, the tale of the Prince Carnetta. But when they get to an impossible thing, you know, he's accompanied by a wise animal, a shaggy pony, and the pony says, when confronting the burning river, which we are, and the glass mountain, the pony says, let my reins be slack, let go of control, and you hold on, because I know how to get us through this. And so the hero does, and they go through the burning river, which we're going through, and the pony says, are you alive at all? And the hero says, barely. And the horse says, if you're barely alive, then surely we will triumph, right? It's the same thing that you were saying.
Exactly.
And it resonates back, and that's the spirit, that's the kind of pluck, that's the evolutionary awakening, that's the thing that was sort of shamed away or suppressed, but it bubbles up in Dungeons and Dragons, and I mean everywhere in imagination. But what we do with our imaginations is so important now. And when you say never give up, and we go, well, that's nature's evolutionary genius, never gives up.
Exactly. And what I want to say is just to carry it forward is not to just say that, well, this is a part of who I am. This is a part of who everyone is. And what I want to say is if you are an environmentalist, if you are a climate scientist, if you are someone who cares about the earth, if you are someone that speaks out on issues or that cares about these issues, then you can see a way out. That there is the mechanism, the seed, the little spark for a way out in you. And if you're hearing those voices telling you that there is no hope, in all honesty, it's just a validation of your importance as someone who can move us forward.
Yay.
It is a validation that you are a leader, because if you are trying, if you are feeling that impetus, then you are already a part of being the solution. So if you feel hopeless, and if there are people telling you that there's no way out, then you're there. You are at the burning river. You have a way to cross.
Right, and a wise pony.
Right, no, and well, let me be the wise pony.
Well, absolutely. Well, the wise pony does turn out to be a prince in disguise.
Oh,
so it all works out. That's great. And again, you know, who brought what to this renaissance? And we're not limiting it to humans. And that's why I am so in love and dedicated with nature's evolutionary genius that we call trickster. That is, you know, the seeds that sprout after fire. It is the resilience. And we had a great ally, Ron Kalk from Yosemite, who lives there, right, and dedicated and guides, previously troubled youth, you know, to get back with nature, and that's the whole thing about, you know, the education and the power of nature. But he's really earned the right, you know, to say things that one might scoff at, because he reported from Yosemite. Well, this is important, that we not be shamed out of our goodness. And, you know, he's a strong, one of the primo mountain climbers in the world, you know, so he's got cred, right? And he's strong enough to be gentle, which I think is just a great way to go. But he left Yosemite first time in 45 years because of the fires. But then to do the show, he drove, he went and filled his lungs up with ocean air. And then he wanted to go back, which is where we did the show from. He went back to the smoldering Yosemite, and he was talking about long vision. You know, here's what we got to do, but also just put your hands on trees. And again, somebody might say that, and they're like, oh, no, no, no. It's like, no, from him, it's like, all right, we will. And longer vision and cooperating and understanding the causes, which you're bringing before us as well. We do have Australian listeners. Hi there. do you want to speak about the heat in their winter, right? I mean, they've just been experiencing extreme heat in Australia, yeah?
Yes. So I video blogged about it recently, and for certain regions of Australia, it's been the hottest period on record for winter. And more importantly, there is very severe drought in southern Australia, which is severely impacting, as for those of you who are listening from Australia, as I'm sure you already know, very severe impacts to agriculture in that region. And unfortunately, these have climate change fingerprints on them. Increasing severity of drought in Australia is related to warming ocean conditions, which are helping to push the prevailing weather patterns that bring moisture to South Australia further toward the pole, and that creates a difficult situation
there. And then it's the micro poignancy, is kinship of seeing, you know, little critters and kangaroos and baby kangaroos, you know, fleeing, and a human giving them a cup of water, you know, and you go, oh, we're all in this thing. And any act of kindness, again, wonderful Lauren Isley, who was a great biologist with the soul of a poet, you know, a lot of his stories, you know, when he sees a man throwing starfish back into the ocean, and he sees the beach littered with them, and he goes, why are you doing that? You'll never, you know, it couldn't possibly matter. And he goes, it matters to this starfish, you know. And so he spent the rest of the morning throwing starfish back into the ocean, because whatever we can save, you know, it matters to that being, you know. But also, you know, where we derive, you know, what is it? Inspiration, aspiration, and action. Wait, what were your three things? Inspiration, aspiration, and will. Wait a minute, and the will to pursue it. All right, imagination, hope, and the will to pursue it. All right, that's good. That's a good bumper sticker.
okay,
but because I have these, you know, from everything, you know, large and small, I have these new puppies, and they meet the world with enthusiasm and curiosity. Like, hello, what's up? Hello, what's up? And they are, we've met right wingers, and they don't care, right? That they meet everything with enthusiasm and curiosity, and they melt, you know, hearts. And we go, oh, right, three drops of that, everybody. It's Martine Prechtel says, think of the divine as a giant puppy licking your chin going, jump up and live. Jump up and live.
So as we get older, it's very important to remember the puppies, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it is. I was talking to a kid doing a reading, and his parents were worried he was suicidal, and we went into it, and couldn't read, you know, but he could read Harry Potter in a day, you know, because it was nutrient rich. But he emerged from our session to his anxious parents' worried looks going, I want a puppy. And I go, that's the opposite of suicide. I mean, it really is.
It absolutely is.
So there's that. All right. So now back to dire beauty, perhaps. So what else? Okay. So there's Australia heat, poignancy, Florida red tide, extreme wildfires in California, the Arctic sea ice. All right, let's just acknowledge that, as well as that's the poignant thing, that if there weren't magic and imagination and Dungeons and Dragons and imagination, hope, and the will to pursue it, we might feel bleak. Because even now, the ship is making its way, trying to make its way through the Arctic ice to open up a channel. And already, we're right now, there is a Russian ship making its way through the Arctic, apparently.
That does not surprise me. Well, so, yeah, if you look at the sea ice right now, the Russian side of the Arctic is completely ice-free, and so you have a passage there. And the Canadian archipelago, I don't think the Northwest Passage at this time is ice-free. I could be wrong. This is based on what I saw yesterday, so it might have changed since yesterday, but the remainder ice in the Canadian archipelago is very thin and diffuse, so any ship with any kind of hull could probably make it through. But what's going on in the Arctic and in so many places? So now it's not really a matter of informing people about what's happening, because I think people can see it.
Okay.
I think that maybe I'm wrong, but I think climate change deniers themselves don't really have much of a leg to stand on anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the general zeitgeist of the public still sympathizes with climate change denial. Maybe I'm just too nose to the grindstone when it comes to climate change to realize that. But my general sense is that people are saying, wow, look at the mountains. Those glaciers are awfully small. Wow. Look at the Arctic. Isn't there supposed to be an ice bridge that runs from Siberia to Canada that people can ski across, as they did 15 years ago? and it's not there anymore. The Arctic is now just a collection of disparate flows of much thinner ice, and the old ice is winnowing away. Now, in my opinion, our goal, our job is to confront the forces of despair within us and among us that are trying to say, no, we deserve this. Humans are bad. You know, reduce the excess population in a very Scrooge, Dickensian kind of way. You know, to say no to that quietly or loudly and say, I see a way out. We see a way out. We see a better way. It's been there for us since the late 1980s when Hansen first addressed Congress. It's been there since Al Gore, as many slings and arrows as Al Gore has received, started to warn us very ardently about how we needed to change. It's been there even since the first scientists back in, well, ironically, the fossil fuel funded scientists in the 50s, 60s, and 70s first identified the fact that, according to the fossil fuel research firms, that science, that climate science was correct. The Earth was going to warm. And ironically, fossil fuel money went to fund the first solar cells.
Right. I actually, yeah. That's, well,
we have a way out.
Right.
I mean, we have the power to get out. We just need to resolve ourselves to turn away from the voices of despair within us.
Right.
And the voices of inaction and reaction and clinging to old ways that were not ever really better and not really ever all that ideal. And to recognize that we are growing and that we are moving forward and that the way we live is we keep moving forward.
Okay. Well, and to put in our again backpack, you know, our conversational eloquence, which includes, you know, encouraging everyone to define things. And, you know, when I cross borders and people are, I go, define that. Or, you know, I'm a member of this, you know, crazy right wing group, the Promise Keepers. You know, do you know what that is? I go, you tell me. You know, anyway, you define for, anyway, but for all of us, you know, an ongoing community and national conversation about what is the role of government, you know, kind of Saturn structure, and, you know, Carolyn Raffensperger and other great guides, you know, it's the public trust doctrine to protect things, to protect the Commonwealth, you know, and to ask every candidate, you know, and also for all of us to dedicate to what is wise governance, and surely it includes dedication to collective well-being. I mean, we know what it isn't, but animating this as of course kind of quality, remembering these common sense things, and I think that's, you know, that conversation wants to happen within everybody. And you know, when you were saying I don't, you know, climate deniers. A few, but I love late great ally Bob Goff, you know, and because he would spiral right when people would go, blah, 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 you know, and he goes, okay, notice any unusual weather? Oh yeah, right. So just change the words, just, you know. And again, I always am grateful to him when presenting, because he was doing renewables on Native American reservations and doing many great things, blessed ancestor now and team. But he would change his PowerPoint when talking to evangelicals, just going, we don't want the fuels from hell. Coal and oil. We want the fuels from heaven, sun, and wind. It's completely true. You're just shape-shifting the mythology to make it accessible.
Well, it's there.
It is there.
It's there in the evangelical mythology, if they
yes.
if they want to look at it, in Revelations.
Well, and stewardship of the earth. Even if you're going to be raptured in a minute, you know, take care of stuff now, right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Destroyers of the earth shall be destroyed is pretty clear. I mean, it's...
Is that biblical? I don't...
I'm paraphrasing Revelations, but yeah.
Wait, say it again so we can put it in our backpack. Destroyers of the earth will be...
The destroyers of the earth will be destroyed. I mean, that's what the lake of fire is all about.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of scary if you look at it, but there is a very clear biblical imperative to take care of creation.
That yeah.
It is not that there's no blurring of the lines. It's take care of earth or done. It's yeah.
That's good.
And if that's been blurred in the Christian consciousness, that's that's a departure.
Well, yeah, well, bringing it back, I like some, yeah, because we want to, you know, rummage through and edit, again, Virgo season of editing. I like this from here, but not that thing, and this from over here. I liked somebody's, I think it was a tweet also saying, remember, before you turn the other cheek, to turn over the tables. Which is kind of fun, and another good bumper sticker, right? So speaking, and then, you know, the sacred teachings of, you know, law and order. I like, you know, Bobby the Jungian cop, because he would speak to somebody about to do a terrible thing, going, "You used to sing in your choir. You got a law degree. You studied the Constitution. Has it come to this?" You know, and he talks them down, and I think that that's also part of our skill from, you know, the Vedas and Law and Order and Star Trek and Dungeons and Dragons. You know, again, you know, distilled everything, going, what are useful working principles from everywhere, and, you know, everybody by their own.
I could go for Star Trek too. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, which one? Which one?
Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Absolutely.
Oh, okay, that's good. I always refer to the ancient one, because we're different.
Well, ancient. Yeah.
Well, no, but remember when. The spirit of fear takes over the spaceship and Captain Kirk, and it feeds on fear. This is very important to us.
Very relevant,
you know, and
to
very,
today.
And also Rod Serling, very important. I want to see if we might have to do another show.
Yeah, sure.
The spirit of fear that had created Jack the Ripper and everything takes over the ship, and it feeds on fear. It's like the Trump thing now. It feeds on fear. It feeds on heat. It feeds on anger. So what does Captain Kirk do? He gets the whole crew stoned. Right, so the monster is like, "Oh, you're all gonna die," and they go, "This guy sure is gloomy."
That's a good metaphor.
It's a very good metaphor, because we want to suck the chi, because this is also, you know, important. Yeah. Many people contributing. I mean, the chaos magicians, as Gary Lachman calls these guys, you know, Bannon and everybody, they're trained in public manipulation of powerful symbolism, you know, and we kind of let that go, going, "We are a secular progressives." It's like, there's no hope in that thing, you know. And again, imagine.
Oh no, they're targeting the root of your brain. Absolutely.
But they contempt for truth, contempt for the weak, contempt for nature, thrive on heat, right? And so our strategy is really like Captain Kirk. You know, do not feed the monster with fear and heat and heat and hot polarity and finger wagging vituperative. What about it's like we have to we. We get to evolve. We don't even have to. We get to evolve, you know, past the kind of and the polarity thing. And, you know, again, as another ally of show says, you know, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict and heat, convince them they're on one side of something. What two needs is three, which is, again, the imaginative unifying story.
So I'm going to poke fun at Trump and say, paraphrase Spock and say, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of Trump.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Another bumper sticker. There we go. Yeah. And also, you know, we're going to be hosting Robin Bell. Soon, I don't know if you know his work, but he's the guy who's projecting light onto the Trump Hotel that says, you know, bribes taken here, you know, treason. Anyway, it's good. We want cultural hijinks that are liberating, that don't feed the monster, because they're satire and wit and human creativity. That's really what we're calling for, you know, liberating cultural hijinks of many natures. So, your
satire is important. But we also need fire in the belly. That's my message. We need action. Satire is good. It's good not to let the fear and smear and misinformation get you down or freeze you in place, because that's really, in my opinion, like, as far as those of us on our side, that's the negative impact. If you freeze, bad.
Well,
you want to act, but you want to act in a positive way and in a way that is constructive, and act with fervor and double down.
I'm writing things down. Okay, imagination fervor.
So,
okay,
so
fervor is good. Yeah.
From
and double down. All right,
yeah.
Double down. I'm writing all this down. Okay. So,
well, yeah, you don't have to write it. I don't want to be a pedagogue and, you know,
no.
This is a teacher. But I, you know, it's funny. So there's I like the saying about Hillary Clinton, she persisted. That's where we need to be. But not just persist in kind of a
no, it wasn't actually about it wasn't about way. Hillary, actually it was
who was about?
It was Was it Claire McCaskill? No, it wasn't Claire McCaskill. It was somebody who wouldn't be quiet in the Senate, going, you shouldn't just, anyway, but anyway. But
well, yeah, well, whoever did that, that's what we right. need to not be quiet.
Not be quiet. No, and, persist and better than resist, I think.
Well, I like resist too, because...
Okay, I want to join the persistence.
You can join the persistence, but resistance is absolutely...
we'll just say a little more about
resist
that.
Resist regression, because well, I think
of resist as the losing move in Aikido, which is okay. Oh, help me! All right, guide me into being friendly with resist.
Well, so if you look at authoritarians, the worst thing you could do is go with them and capitulate. So you need to resist, but you need to resist smart. Aikido is certainly a hand-to-hand combat art. It's a form of resistance, but it's a smart resistance because you use the energy of your opponent to redirect. Yeah. And if we can learn to do that, if we can learn to invite, for example, non-irrational Republicans to do the right thing, that would be the Aikido form of resistance, an example of that. So turning the negative energies of your foe into a positive somehow. But still, in my
mythos.
In my mythos, Aikido is still a form of resistance, just redirection.
Right, although they do, well, who knows what they say in Japanese, right?
I could be wrong.
These are fine points, yes. For our council, for our extending council to play with, you know, language and all, going, do we really want to resist? And, okay, you do it, okay, okay.
What I mean by resistance is not going along with the racism.
Yeah, definitely.
And fear and the retraction of protections that you were talking about, and the recoloring of everything to boil down to just, you know, money, but from a certain specific interest, and all the things that have been so destructive in the past, but would be if we went along with it this time, much more destructive. It's very important for California, for example, to pass SB 100 and go for that 100% renewable energy in the present context, because if the federal government is going in the wrong direction, all of those who are aware of the situation, who want to deal with the situation, need to go even further in the right direction. It won't completely counteract negative impacts from the federal level, but it will mitigate them and reduce them. And also, it provides a precedent of leadership. You can point to what's happening in California and say, that's where we need to go, not Trump's, right, you know, mangling of the EPA. So right. That's what I mean by resistance.
That's great. No, and that's a great finale. We're 20 seconds out, really, too. But it's like, okay. So our great ally Robert Scribler, also known as his real name Robert Fanny. You can find his. Well, just Google or search. Excuse me, you're not supposed to use the word Google. Just search and internet search. It's a tough one. But anyway, so it's imagination, hope, will to pursue, fervor, and double down. Is that your...
Sounds good.
All right, that's great. All right, thank you. Thank you so much, Rob Fanny, and we will do more. And thanks to Michael Cohn for board opping. I'm Caroline Casey. Follow me on Twitter, Stand Up Coyote. You can follow Rob on Twitter as well, at Rob Fanny, or Robert Scribler, coyotenetworknews.com. And we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you, team.